You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Wednesday, so it's time for Wayne on Wednesday. Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg. And Wayne, I conducted a podcast with somebody earlier on, and I have to say that you've caught me with a spring in my step when it comes to South Africa. He gave a speech, and I watched the speech on some video feed, and he focused on three things: state-owned enterprises, the economy and the lack of growth, and politics. And he said that we hosted all these money managers from overseas. He's from a large institution. We hosted all these managers from overseas, and they came and they saw South Africa and they heard about South Africa, and they were all glum and almost frightened, he said. They got a fright when they came to South Africa, and they left with a slightly more conciliatory demeanour. And I must say, he made a compelling argument for all of those three headlines: SOEs, economy and politics. And it seems to be representing itself in, for example, the performance of the rand.
I mean, this is a stuck record on my behalf.
Yep.
Maybe now it's actually what I've been thinking about now for a long time. It's actually now finally going to happen, is that we're going to get interest rate cuts, commodity upcycle.
Bless you.
You have to cut that out.
No, I'll leave it in. It makes you more human.
Commodity upcycle, falling interest rates, good rand, not good South African economy, but better South African economy. So, you know, because we live in such a cyclical environment, well, this is a global story, but maybe even more so for emerging markets that are essentially commodity exporters, we go through so many cycles. I mean, to me, there's two good examples. I can remember the end of the 90s.
Yeah.
Rand tanked out of bed. Okay, look, admittedly, that was also coincided with abolishing the financial rand, which did protect the commercial rand quite extensively. But anyway, the whole of the 90s, we're in a commodity down cycle, and the rand was trashed, and the SA economy was trashed, and you tried by any means possible to get as much global non-rand exposure as you could. Remember the old asset swaps?
Yes, I do.
Your phone was ringing off the desk with people who wanted asset swap capacity. And then China happened and everything reversed. The rand strengthened enormously. Our stock market outperformed the U.S. stock market by 350% in dollar terms for the next 10 years. And then it turned around. So in other words, life was so wonderful in South Africa during those China years. We were growing at 4-5%. We grew so fast, we ran out of electricity. Then we had the big downturn till 2015, accompanied with President Zuma, and life was going to just absolutely fall out of bed. Then we had a bit of an upcycle. So in other words, we are heavily, heavily cyclical. It's either really terrible or not so terrible. I wouldn't even say it's good, but it's really absolutely awful, or sometimes not that awful and maybe a little bit acceptable. So whenever you evaluate conditions in South Africa, the rand, the share market, unemployment, jobs, the whole lot, you've got to be very cognizant of where we are in the commodity cycle. So going back to my previous example,
yes,
people couldn't buy enough South African assets. The foreign money was flowing in. The foreign banks were coming here in droves and buying up stockbroking firms and setting up shop here. And McDonald's was coming and the whole lot. They just wanted to get themselves something, some part of South Africa. So life was wonderful. We were running a budget surplus, man. Mm. Trevor Manuel had too much money. Then the cycle turned. So as I said earlier on, whenever you look at South Africa, you have got to take into account where we are in the commodity cycle. And at the moment, and it might be turning and maybe it has turned, but at the moment we're at the bottom. So when you evaluate us at the bottom of the cycle, don't expect to find good news anywhere. And of course, this has been compounded by Eskom, Transnet, politics. Well, I actually think politics are relatively constant worldwide. as being most of the time just absolute shambles and catastrophic. I don't know whether that's any, the degree might be different in South Africa, but I don't think it's that different anywhere else in the world. I mean, I've said this many times, how we as a so-called civilized society has decided that the best way to govern ourselves is with politicians. But let's put that aside. So 2 years' time, things could be very different. It could be in a commodity upcycle. The rand could be 17. The share market's outperforming. I mean, the share market's gone up from 72,000 to 80,000 in a very short time period. The money will be coming back to South Africa. You will be so unhappy with your overseas investments because they'll underperform South African investments. But then if that does happen, then don't forget to sell South African assets and go back offshore again, because then more than likely, if we do have a good cycle, the next one, the next part of the cycle will be down again. You know, as we were talking about, as I was talking about earlier on, people couldn't get enough asset swap capacity at the end of the 90s. They had to take as much money as they possibly could overseas. I think the rand was 12 or 13 against the US dollar.
Yeah.
Our next stop was 6 rand 50. Eh? Now, I'm not for a moment saying it's going to strengthen that much this time around, but what I am emphasizing is it's cyclical, and hopefully we get to, going to get the better part of the cycle coming up now.
Okay. Let me talk to you about the commodity cycle now. It interests me strangely because a couple of days ago, gold and copper were going through the roof, and there were so many bullish reports upon copper. I mean, gold is not an industrial metal. It's a sentimental metal in my books, but also a store of value. Copper was going through the roof. And suddenly, suddenly, as soon as the headlines scream copper and gold, then they both fall back. Gold, for example, at the moment, 2,394, which is an elevated level if you've been away for a few months.
Level,
still really high. And copper today, as I look at it on my screen, is $4.86 per pound, but that's down nearly 5% on the day. So something's happened. And what people are saying is it's because the UK inflation number didn't come in line with expectations. Now, go back a while, several months, many, many months, inflation in the UK was 11.1%.
11%, yeah.
11.1%. Yeah. It's now 2.3%. And people are complaining that it's come down from 3.2% to 2.3%. I think it's an amazing performance, and it's a good number.
It is an amazing performance, yeah.
Yes.
Now, look, that's just a one-day movement. I mean, copper has run so goddamn hard it needed some weakness.
Hmm.
I mean, it was basically back at record highs, eh?
Very much so.
Yeah, so, I mean, some weakness is not untoward. It doesn't change anything. Look, everything is still entirely dependent. And look, to be honest, the UK economy just isn't big enough to swing anything.
No.
You know, other than on a one-day small basis. It's just, there is still, unfortunately, let's say 1.5 gorillas around.
Yeah.
The rest almost don't count, to be honest. And, so it's all dependent on the U.S. interest rate, inflation, and the data coming out. And this little spurt we've seen in our markets now is only on the back of that U.S. inflation number being on the let's call it the right side of the consensus for a change. And it was only by 0.1%, but on the previous 3 months where it was on the wrong side of consensus by 0.1%, all hell broke loose. And some more positive statements or comments from the Federal Reserve people. So that's why we're seeing this little flip, yeah? It could reverse, damn it, tomorrow again. Who knows? But hopefully we're turning and we've seen the worst.
Yes, hopefully. And the other thing I want to talk about just before I leave the presentation that I saw was the chap that I interviewed today. He described a graph that he'd put together, and he says he plotted the number of days of no load shedding in South Africa. And I think it was something like 51 or 52 days consecutively with no load shedding. And then he overlaid that with the performance of the South African rand against the US dollar. He says there's a huge correlation between load shedding and the performance of the rand. And it seems so simple, but it's very true.
Yeah, but it's also to do with the cycle turning. It's also to do with the U.S. inflation number coming out. It's also to do with this is all one unit. Mm. I mean, if bad U.S. inflation comes out, we could have had no load shedding for 3 months and the rand would have tanked. You know, so I think I think that's a little bit of look, it is good news. Make no mistake. It is fantastic news. But I think that to correlate the correlation of that to the rand is a little bit coincidental, I think.
All right.
I think it's more to do with the U.S. inflation. But anyway.
We'll take it.
You'll take good news from anywhere. My mentor in investments, and he's a fantastic man. Not just investment-wise, he's a good man. He's in many, many respects, and not just work-wise, as I said.
Yeah.
He once said to me, in investments, you will take help from the devil.
Mm. Spooky. Is he still alive?
Yes.
Oh, good. Okay. Wayne, on the commodities front, BHP has a deadline today that it needs to observe.
Yeah.
It has to make a formal offer for Anglo American PLC by close of business today, I think.
Yes, something like that, yeah.
What are they going to do? Up their bid?
I don't think they're going to offer.
Oh.
I don't think they're going to offer.
Hmm.
I don't know. That's just an absolute guess on my side. Because if you're going to offer, why wait until, you know, a minute before midnight? And if you're going to do another offer, you've done all your homework already. Because look, the way these deals work is that the companies say, the one that's going to now buy the other one, they say, we've done all of our sums and the value is 100. But we're only going to offer 70. Because that's negotiation. You know, you don't give your best offer up front.
Of course
not. And we know they're going to reject the 70, and then we'll offer them 95. Because if we offer them 100, then it's just meeting our cost of capital. You know, we might as well invest that money in our own business because we can generate that return. Because we're not getting a windfall. Because at 100, that's the full valuation. So we offer them 90 or 95 a second time around, and then any offer over that, you're actually putting yourself at risk. And that's what happens in most of these deals. The biggest reason why deals aren't successful is that they just pay too much for the company to start off with. That's the biggest single reason for mergers and everything being unsuccessful is they just overpaid to start off.
The corporate world is littered over the decades with M&A activity, which everyone's excited about, that fall by the wayside. I can't remember what it was, but it was years ago I did an interview on this very subject. And it was something like 70% of M&A activity actually destroys wealth rather than creates it.
Yes, correct. Because most M&As happen at the top of the cycle.
Yeah.
Okay, now a classic example, seeing that we're talking about BHP Billiton, the China years that ended in 2018 with the global financial crisis. Anglo American almost bankrupted themselves by starting that copper project in South America, which is the thing that BHP wants to buy now. And old Cynthia Carroll was absolutely slaughtered and kicked out on her bum because she'd made this big acquisition that literally almost bankrupted Anglo's. The Anglo share price fell from 800 to 50. And she was goners. But the reason why these things fail is that because they're doing it at the absolute top of the cycle. Now, I've thought about this so many times because it normally does happen. Why do commodity companies always buy at the top of the cycle? Surely they know the cycle better than you and I. And I've worked out it's the only time they got money. At the bottom of the cycle, they're scratching pennies together. So the only time deals are done is at the top of the cycle because it's the only time they can do a deal because it's the only time they got money. Now, my actual example is BHP Billiton. Remember them at the top of the cycle in 2008. That they are so fortunate it didn't work. Otherwise, they might very easily have gone bankrupt because they were paying over the top by a country mile. Lucky there were terms and conditions and they could walk away from the deal because of the global financial crisis. So, you know, they look like absolute saints because they did quite well. They didn't bankrupt, almost bankrupt themselves like Anglos, but it was sheer luck. Now, this time around, remember we had the terrible cycle up to 2015 where the companies almost went bankrupt. Since then, they've spent no capital expenditure, Mickey's. So they've got very healthy balance sheets, and that's why they can. That's why BHP can do the offer now. Look, I know obviously a lot of shares are involved, but that's what they can do the offer now, is that, you know, they've conserved their balance sheets. All commodity companies have actually conserved their balance sheets over this last time period because they almost all went bankrupt in 2013. Once again, coming back to the central theme, which has really dominated our conversation today,
yes,
this is a cycle.
Yeah, it is. It's all about cycles. And what I love about cycles is if you get on that bicycle and if you start pedaling, then, yeah, goodness me, you're in for a wild ride. The other thing I was going to say, if you were going to ring me back or something, was that Cynthia Carroll's not my favourite woman that I've ever interviewed in my life. I'm sure she's a very nice person, and if you went to a drinks party or a braai or something, yeah, she'd give you a good conversation. But she was incredibly rude to me. And
yeah, look, I've never met her, so I can't even comment on it.
Well, I tell you, all she did was she'd had a few interviews with South African journalists, and so her PA or whoever it was phoned me up and said, Lindsay, please try and speak slowly, and please try and speak English, because she's had some interviews where she hasn't understood what the South African person was saying. And I thought, you know what?
Yeah.
That is just dismissive and rude.
But why didn't her PR person tell her that you like a half soti in any case?
Exactly.
So there should be no difficulty understanding your language, your English.
Yeah, because they don't know. I was just on the list of probably 100 people that she had to interview.
You were just a person.
Yeah, I was just a nothing in her life. And the other thing she did, I made a mistake. I got mixed up with Alcoa and Alcan, the company that she used to work for.
Yeah.
And she admonished me on air.
I'm sure they didn't endear you.
Live. She could have said, oh, by the way, Lindsay, it's this one, not this one. But she was very, very rude.
Yeah.
Anyway, Anglo-American, well rid of her, I say. I wish her well and everything. But in the boardroom, not for me.
Anyone who wants to have, I don't even know what kind of experience to call it or what, but anyone who's listening in here who wants to go and truly have a look at, let's call it old school South Africa.
Yes.
Let's go and have a look at what the ex-deputy chairman of Anglo-American said about Cynthia Carroll after she left.
Ooh, tell me.
And the chap's name was Graham Boustred.
Yes.
I'm sure it was Graham. There's two brothers. There's Richard and Graham, but I'm pretty sure it was Graham. They interviewed him at his – he was on retirement already, and they interviewed him about Cynthia Carroll after she'd left Anglo-American. Anyone who wants to understand maybe what old-school thoughts were about women, so this is a hugely sexist, misogynistic statement that he made there, but it's – if you can find it, I'm sure it's around, try and find that statement. I'll tell you another story about the Boustred brothers.
Yes.
They own Skor. Their family owned Skor Metals, which stood for Steel Ceilings and Aluminium Works.
Yes, and I remember it listed. It was listed,
Anglo,
wasn't
Anglo
it?
Anglo bought it.
Was it listed?
It was part of Anglo's.
Yeah.
It may have been listed, but I think we'll ask Shapiro because he knows what was listed in the 1920s and 1930s because he was around then.
Just about, yeah.
But as far as I remember, I don't remember Skor being listed, but it was part of Anglo-American Industrial Corporation.
Right.
But anyway, the story about Graham, I'm sure it was Graham, but Graham Boustred was that he would phone you. He was the MD of Skor. He would phone you any time of the day or night, and if you didn't answer your phone in 4 weeks, you were in deep, deep trouble. So he was like working at 8 o'clock at nighttime at the Skor offices in Wadeville, wherever they are, and he wanted some information, and he phoned this person, and they didn't answer the phone, and he had to phone again. And some chap picked up the phone that it was the wrong guy. It wasn't the guy he was after, because he didn't, Graham Brasler didn't recognize his voice. And this is all, you know, I don't know whether this happened or not. And Graham Brasler absolutely went down on this guy. Where's this guy gone? Where's this guy? He should be at his desk. He should be working. He knows it's urgent. And this other guy saying, yes, yes, he's not here. And then Graham Brasler says, do you know who I am? The other guy said, yes, I know who you are, but do you know who I am? And Graham Brasler said, no, and he just hung up the phone.
Yeah, you see, I mean, there's a fine line between being dedicated to work and being rude to people. I'm leaning more towards conciliatory conversations as I get older. Wayne, a company that I hadn't heard of 2.5-3 years ago called NVIDIA is holding the market in the palm of its hand at the moment, because everyone's waiting for these numbers. It's almost like the world is going to be made or broken by these numbers. It's quite extraordinary, isn't it?
It is. But I mean, understand that this is not NVIDIA and their ilk, the Mag 7. I like the way investment, you always got to summarize things, the Mag 7. These are proper companies. This is not a dot-com boom. Eh? These are proper companies. The share price might go down if the earnings disappoint, et cetera, and there might be a lot of hype in the share price. But these companies are not, this is not the dot-com. And I think for old guys like me, I was so lucky with the dot-com, and it was sheer luck. I didn't get burnt, and it was sheer luck, but it left a scar on me. And I've got to fight against that scar with companies like the Magnificent Seven and blah, blah, all these other acronyms, because inherently in my gut, I still remember that dot-com burst, because those companies just disappeared.
They weren't companies. That's the whole point. I mean, weddings, a wedding planner.
They weren't companies.
A wedding planner listed, for goodness sake.
I can remember a chap from one of the brokers, and I obviously won't mention his name. He came around just before the dot-com bubble burst, and he said, the NASDAQ's going to 5,000. This is the new age. It's an exact quote was, it's a dripping roast at this price.
I hate that phrase.
And the next thing, it got slaughtered like you cannot believe. And how many years later? It actually did go through 5,000, but many, many years later. But we're waiting for the NVIDIA results. I'm not sure what time South African time they're out.
After the market closes, so after 10 o'clock, I think, 10 p.m., and by which time you'll be tucked up in bed with a full tummy. And on that
I will be long gone. And nowadays, you actually feel quite proud if you're on snorking, if you're on sleeping before 8 o'clock. If you're up at 8, you say, sure, it's actually quite late there. Look at me. I'm a youngster.
I'm telling you, the opposite of me. I'm awake I always set my target for just 12:30 to go to sleep. But that's because I don't have to get up at 5 or 6.
I used to be a night owl. I never went to bed before 12 or past 12. Never. And yet in my old age, it's totally and utterly swapped around. I get up at half past 4.
Yeah.
What but for? Anyway, yes, you were saying.
Oh, yeah. Never mind.
I've got lots of one thing I'm never short of is things to do. So I get up at half past 4. I go and do some sewing. I write up the books for my little business. I go through my office stuff. The only thing in life I'm short of is time.
The only thing I'm not short of is time, actually. And I know what I should be doing. And I sit there and I think, I should be doing this. I should be writing this and that and analysing that. And I don't do it because I'm not a diligent person like you, Wayne. But anyway, we're getting off subject now, because you mentioned the phrase dripping roast. Now, that got me thinking that this time last week, you were telling me about frozen waffles and crispy bacon, because your partner, the world's biggest rugby fan, was on one of her missions to Cape Town. Yeah, and you were a lost cause. You were a lost lamb.
The dog and I, the dog and I were fending for ourselves.
Yeah, I know. It's a sad state of affairs. Survive. So she's back now, and have you got any stories? Did she make you a dripping roast, for example?
She made me, not a dripping roast. She cooked some steak, and she is the sauce queen. She can make gravy and sauces, honey mustard sauce, gravy for your roast, lovely mixed with onions and herbs and spices. And she made a steak with some chippies on the side, and then she made mustard with brandy and caramelized onions and mushrooms, and it was delicious.
Do you keep the sauce on the side, or do you smother your steak in that concoction?
I put it over the steak,
Okay.
But it was, I mean, as I said, she is the absolute queen of making gravies and sauces. I mean, last night we had boerewors, and we have boeries often because both like boerewors.
Mm-hmm.
And she also made a lovely gravy with some onions and some herbs and spices and some, you buy it at Woolworths, crispy onions, like little onion bits.
Yeah.
So she fried normal onions, but then you add these crispy onion bits into it, and it gives you a nice texture when you eat it. So now she is, honestly, now for the third or fourth time, she is the queen of making a gravy or a sauce to put on.
I've got a couple of secret sauces that if I ever speak to her, or you pass on a message from me to her, some secret ingredients that I have when it comes to gravies. One is, well, it's not secret anymore, one is strawberry or raspberry jam, a spoonful of that into a gravy. Yeah. And the other one is Bovril. I don't know if you're familiar with Bovril, but it's like Marmite, except I love it. Yeah, put that in an onion gravy.
It's less sharp than Marmite.
Marmite, yeah.
So look. The world's biggest cooked. We've spoken about this before, but she did Christmas lunch, just the two of us, and she did a gammon, and then the sauce to pour over the gammon, she used cranberry and port
in
the sauce.
Yeah.
Was that delicious?
Oh gosh! Okay, you've done it again, Wayne.
Are you starving?
I'm drooling here. Actually, I've got some saliva on my microphone. Wayne, thank you very much. I'm glad things are back to normal at Shea McCurry, and we'll speak again next week. Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager when he's not eating at FNB Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg, and that was Wayne on Wednesday. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.